It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 12th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, the World Cup kicks off. This afternoon, Brazil will be playing Croatia. This season will likely prove one of the world's most watched sports seasons of all time. The World Cup final in 2006 was watched by an estimated 715 million people around the world. But in 2014, the world is a different place, one where lots of people hope to watch the soccer ball soar and skid without a cable television connection. So, how will they do it? Court senior editor Zach Seward joins me to break it down. Zach, nice to have you on again.
I'm glad to be back.
I was watching CBS on my area this morning. Is that how I'm going to watch some World Cup games, or do I got to get more serious than that? What am I doing?
That will help you for about 10 of the World Cup matches, including the final. That's free over-the-air television. You can put an antenna in the air, watch it that way. You can use a service like Aereo to watch it over the internet, although it should be noted that the Supreme Court is currently weighing the legality of Aereo. Quite possible they rule before the final, and that goes out the door as an option.
Okay, so what else?
It's a fairly dire situation for cord cutters, or that is people not paying for cable television. You're almost out of luck, although I have a few tips if that's the way you're going.
Hit me.
The first is, even if you don't speak Spanish, try Univision.
Well, also, you know, these days, goal is basically universal.
That works in any language. That is about where it stops within the bounds of legality. And I, you know, would be the last person to suggest that people do anything that might violate a terms of service or international copyright.
But describe to me the dark arts.
Well, here's the thing. It's important, I think, as a business story to understand that there will clearly be plenty of people in the U.S. looking for illegal streams of these games online, and there are websites that point people to the streams in more or less real time. There's, you know, even simpler approaches, which is essentially to pretend that your internet connection is in another country. The U.K. and Canada would be two places to try for English language streams that are far less restrictive than in the U.S.
Zach Seward, senior editor at the website Court. Zach, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All this week, we're doing a series called The Data on Our Data. A year after the Edward Snowden leaks, we're giving you five singular data points that remind us how much we now know about surveillance and how much the surveillers know about us. You've heard about location data, recording phone calls, and copying our digital address books. So here's another number for you, $278 million. Context from visiting Harvard Law School professor Susan Crawford.
So this is the amount spent by the NSA in fiscal 2013 under what it calls its Corporate Partner Access Project. What they're doing is reimbursing telecommunications companies for domestic surveillance of all internet traffic.
The National Security Agency says that it's pulling data on only non-U.S. citizens. Telecom companies, as well as tech companies, need to comply with the surveillance orders made possible through the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. But they're still not allowed to be fully transparent on what data they're being paid to give up. And the access is unfettered.
We do know that the fiber optic cables that NSA is getting access to carry everything, all of our phone calls, all of our emails, and that our concern is that domestic surveillance can be carried out through these foreign intelligence programs.
In other words, once they got the keys to the candy store and there's no real accounting, it's tough to tell what the NSA, our government, is paying for. If you want to know what any of these numbers actually look like, we've got some powerful graphics on them. Head to marketplacetech.org. Marketplace Tech is listener-supported, and twice a year, we invite you to make a gift to support the tech and business reporting you've come to rely on. A gift from you in any amount helps fuel a daily dose of tech news from Marketplace. Help us end the budget year strong by making a gift at marketplace.org by June 30th. We've been talking about the big E3 video game trade fair in Los Angeles this week. There have been plenty of announcements from the big game companies, new games, new television shows based on games, and more. But we wanted to get a sense of what this thing looked like. Turns out we know a guy who's been hanging around E3 this week. Marketplace's David Weinberg. David, how are you?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm well. What's going on over there?
Right now, I'm looking at a replica of an army base that looks like it would be set up in the Middle East, and they're having people run through an obstacle course for a G.I. Joe game to try to win a copy of the video game.
Let me ask you what else you've seen. Is there anything that sort of blew your mind? I know there was a lot of talk about virtual reality and, you know, things like Oculus Rift and Sony's new virtual reality headset.
I am in the waiting list to actually go experience Oculus Rift, but I talked to a lot of people who, I mean, you could just see on their faces coming out of the demonstration that it had just blew their mind. It seems to be the one thing that's set apart from everything else here.
Let me ask you, David, I know that you're a gamer yourself, or at least a former gamer. Does going to one of these things make you miss your former intense gaming days?
Oh, definitely. It's like, you know, I would call myself a retired gamer. But there's definitely this sense of, like, holy cow, this world has changed so much since I used to play video games. And there's a part of me that's like, well, I want to understand this world. And it is way more complex than anything I've ever played, you know, back in the day.
David, good luck understanding that world there at E3 Marketplace's David Weinberg. Thank you for joining us, David.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Quick note, yes, there was a so-called worm working its way through popular Twitter software TweetDeck yesterday. Essentially, it was a single tweet with some code in it that made any user working with TweetDeck actually retweet the message. About 84,000 users ended up doing just that in the ripple effect that ensued. No word yet on whether the bug was just a prank or something more malicious, but Twitter says the bug is now fixed. We'll keep you posted. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.